Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 190. So today I am talking to Butch Valenzuela of Visaya KPO. Butch is a proud Filipino, but spent 30 formative years of his earlier career in the US. He then returned back to the Philippines and saw a good opportunity in the BPO sector, which he has pursued and never looked back on. So there's a lot of interesting learning, a lot of interesting insight from Butch into the bigger end of town of outsourcing. I really enjoyed this, and I'm sure you will too. If you want any of the show notes, just or any information that we discuss here, just go to outsourceaccelerator.com/190. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today I'm joined by Butch Valenzuela of Visaya KPO. Hi, Butch. How are you?
Good afternoon, Derek. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic. And thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. I've got you on this podcast to discuss your KPO, and we can even discuss the differentiator between a KPO and a BPO, but also just to explore your background first. So you're a Filipino and returned to the Philippines after 30 years in the US, which isn't that unusual. In that, you know, you get a lot of people going away and then returning, and for both lifestyle and professional development, no doubt. You came back in 2006 and started Visaya KPO in 2007. So, really excited to hear that journey. I suppose initially you can introduce yourself far better than me. So do you want to give us a bit of background?
Sure. Anyway, my name's Butch Valenzuela. I left the Philippines actually when I was about 24 and went to UCLA for a couple of years. My background's really been in IT. I was an MIS director for a Fortune 200 company called ITT Industries. That was my last job. Worked for ITT for about 16 years. For the first 10 years, I was an IT director, and then I moved up to become a financial controller. So I do know a little bit of both sides of the house, the IT side of the house, as well as the financial side of the house. Mm-hmm. When I left ITT, I was actually doing a lot of M&A work. I actually became the director of strategic planning and e-business for the group of ITT called Jabsco. And we were about a $276 million company at that time, or a group of companies. And I basically did a lot of traveling, doing targeting companies for acquisition. For those that do not know, ITT used to own the Sheraton hotels, Avis rent a car, and you know, about 400 different companies throughout the world.
Wow, I did not know that, Butch. That's amazing. What's the capitalization of ITT then? How big are they?
Well, ITT was actually at that time about an $8 billion company. Mm. In revenue. So they were into several things until the CEO by the name of Howard Janine came in and said, you know, this is kind of crazy that we are so diverse and I would like to actually go back to our core, which was actually fluid handling systems.
Right. Wow. I was going to say that because there's a lot of cross-industry stuff there going on, yeah?
Right. So I came in through an acquisition of a company called Flowjet Corporation out of California. Flowjet is actually, very interestingly enough, was owned by a Filipino. But we don't, you probably might not have heard of the company, you know, but we do touch people's lives every day. We make the pump that pushes the syrup for Coke and Pepsi.
Right.
So it's been, you know, the company became very successful, and consequently got acquired by ITT Industries.
Right. Wow. Isn't that amazing? The
yes,
humble, humble beginnings, huh? And obviously the pump has some kind of specific IP then, does it? Because you would imagine kind of to pump a bit of syrup in doesn't need to be that specialized necessarily.
They are actually fairly specialized pumps. There's only two companies in the world that make it in a big way. I mean, there's more, but there's really two primary vendors for Coke and Pepsi, and that's Flowjet Corporation, or at least before it was called Flowjet Corporation. Mm. Today it's ITT Flowjet,
right.
And another company called SureFlow.
Wow. Incredible. So you had sort of significant corporate experience in there. You went into the merger and acquisition department. Did you and by, you know, as a question also working, you know, within the financial aspect of the company, did the company have any involvement with outsourcing that actual company? And did you develop any perspectives on outsourcing, specifically Philippine outsourcing within ITT, or were they completely sort of oblivious to it?
No, I was completely oblivious to it.
Right.
ITT did not, you know, really outsource. I guess in some way, we, you know, ITT is the largest pump company in the world. So, in theory, we would have subcontractors to make, you know, different types of products that we might, that ITT has. But nevertheless, not the type of outsourcing that we do here in the Philippines, where we do a lot of voice and back office type work.
Mm.
You know, ITT, when I was working for ITT, I had no idea what a call center actually meant.
Right.
But when I decided to quit ITT and come back to the Philippines, I just saw how the call center industry or the contact center industry was growing. And I decided, you know, that is probably something that I could do. It's very similar to manufacturing. You know, at the end, you could take, you know, all the manufacturing concepts like TQM, Lean Six Sigma, and apply it in the contact center industry.
Mm. Because it's all about efficiency of processes, isn't it? And effectively a production line, I suppose, without the physical aspects of it.
Absolutely. You know, in manufacturing, you have a physical product. In the contact center industry, you have, you know, people as your product. So it's really the how good your people can deliver.
Right. So you had a very stellar corporate career in the U.S. You obviously had, you know, very strong associations with the Philippines, but you were coming back into the Philippine society and looking around. And what, you know, as a sort of strong corporate background, how did the potential of outsourcing hit you? Where did you see the real potential, the value add of the sector?
I just thought that it was an industry that was growing. And, you know, I could see the need for it stateside. I could also see the value that the Philippines could actually provide the global market.
Mm.
When you think about it, you know, one of the, I guess, primary core competence of the Philippines is really not only the English component of it, but also the cultural component of it. So if we are a country that is, you know, has been ruled, and I really don't like that word, but it has been ruled by Spain and, you know, the United States for quite some time. And we had adapted the American culture in everything that we do. when it comes to television, when it comes to Hershey's Kisses.
Yeah, pizza and basketball.
Basketball and everything else. So, yeah. And it you know, it's a very easy transition, basically, from a, you know, the cultural perspective. The other thing that I also noticed is that in the United States, you know, in my house, for example, all our appliances were General Electric. So whenever you called for service, it would typically be India that would pick up.
Right.
And, you know, in that experience, I was thinking, you know what, we can do better than this. Mm. So, and it ended up that we have. Because today, from a voice component, we had over, you know, we've exceeded both from a revenue and an FTE perspective in voice. We've exceeded India in 2010.
Right. And it makes sense, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely, it's got a better affinity because of the cultural, you know, alignment and the English, natural sort of English. It really is suited for that, isn't it? And so you have a very strong foundation in actually the call center. And when you started in 2007, the whole industry was a lot more call center oriented. Now it's expanded to far more many roles. But in terms of the call center, I suppose, foundations, do you think, you know, even you as a consumer in the US, do you think there's still a bit of a hangover when people, the average consumer, thinks of call centers, thinks they're going to be put through to someone in India or the Philippines, and, you know, there's a sigh of frustration? Now, I know that that's not fair. I know that the industry is incredibly effective at what it does and well-trained and highly optimized and efficient. But is it because of a hangover from 20 years ago when the whole thing started, there wasn't as good a training? Or do you think that those problems still persist with, you know, the aspect of basically outsourcing customer service to a high delivery standard?
I think that people are actually, in the U.S., the average consumer has gotten used to it, that when they actually pick up the phone, chances are that they could be answered either in the Philippines or in India or some other part of the world. You know, there was a point in time when, you know, there was a lot of pushback, I guess, or a lot of comments that you'd hear about it.
Mm.
But over the years, you know, what I've noticed is that people are pretty much getting used to it, and, you know, as part of the norm.
Mm.
You know, but an interesting part, and, you know, I'm sure you will be asking me about artificial intelligence and how robotics would be working. I actually encountered a call in I was in the U.S. last March, and I had to call for personal business, and I was talking to this lady on the phone for almost 2 minutes until I realized it wasn't a lady. It was actually AI.
Wow, really?
It's very seamless, and you know, and it.
Who was that? Was that a big corporation that you were phoning?
It was a big company, yes.
Yeah.
That I was talking to.
That is impressive, isn't it?
It was impressive, but, you know, I guess I will also say this as well. When it comes to AI, and, you know, we've had a lot of talk about what it is going to do to this industry in the Philippines. My position on it is that, you know, technology is here to stay, and you know, the growth of technology year over year has actually been fairly impressive, to say the least.
Mm.
But at the end, you know, I really feel that it will still take some time to catch up. When you think about it, you know, when you talk about, or we are a smaller player. Relative to the Convergys and the Teleperformances of the world, right? So our clients are really more the small to medium-sized companies. And when you talk about small to medium-sized companies, you're talking about perhaps maybe a $10 to $500 million revenue a year company. In the United States, you know, you'd say, well, that's a hell of a lot of money. And that would be true from a Philippine selling perspective, but from a U.S. perspective, that's still pretty medium.
And you're saying they don't have the scale of these sort of massive processes and they need more flexibility and agility? Is that why AI can't necessarily have an impact on those?
That probably would be one answer to that question. But the other question, quite honestly, is cost. We are not at a point yet where, you know, deploying AI for every process that you do is at a point wherein, you know, you could go to a Radio Shack that is no longer around, but, and just buy it. It's not there yet.
No. And I think it's at the early adopter stage at the moment, isn't it? And so it's expensive, it's not necessarily working that well, but you're going to get the big boys playing around with it because they have potential gains in efficiency. But then eventually it will, I imagine, trickle down, won't it, into the kind of SME space. And using that as a, I suppose, analogy or a segue, what are your, because there's a lot of talk in terms of outsourcing now being a sunset industry, there's a lot of concern, but what are your thoughts about the migration from the user base of outsourcing no longer necessarily being the big corporates, but moving down the ladder into the SME space and even into the sort of micro enterprise space?
Well, I guess let me, you could take it and break it out into pieces, right? When you really think about it, when it comes to the Philippines, per se, we really need to also look at how do we train our people to move up the ladder into the more higher value add type work. We as an organization, we do a lot of U.S. healthcare work. We are a HIPAA compliant organization. We are actually audited by a U.S. firm for HIPAA compliance. It's when you think about U.S. healthcare today, there is a lot of processes, to be honest, that are not automated at the moment. We might have a lot of deployment, and especially during the Obama years, wherein, you know, they had at first incentivized physicians to actually go into more of the automated stuff and, you know, incentivize them with to pay for the technology of it. But the reality is, the widespread deployment of it, it's there, but it's really not very efficient at the moment, just.
And you're talking about, obviously, you know, there's the big clients, the big end of town, and then you're saying as a smaller BPO, you're focusing on the $10 to $500 million range. There's still, you know, the huge swathe of companies that are probably $1 million up to $20 million. In fact, the vast, vast majority of companies in terms of, numbers. What do you see in the U.S. specifically, the general awareness of outsourcing, the general awareness of the potential of outsourcing for those companies to access outsourcing services, whether it is customer service or, operational support, building a website? Is there sort of a growing awareness in the U.S.? Is there resistance in the U.S.? How do you see that market seeing outsourcing?
I think more and more the SMEs, the people that are in my space are in that range, up to $500 million. They are today still I think the cost component certainly is one thing, but you know, the other thing is really you look at medical coding, for example, and you look at Medicare, you know, as an example for it. And you know, today there are about 76 million baby boomers in the United States. So if you think about how many times would an elderly person go to see a doctor or go to a hospital, that translates to a chart, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, the volume is just enormous. And, you know, quite honestly, there's still a shortfall, I guess, in the number of medical coders, certified medical coders that need to do the work in the United States. So India has been a very big player in this for a very long time, that the Philippines is actually, you know, only today it seems that the Philippines has been a laggard in it, but today trying to catch up. And
right.
Hopefully, you know, we do have a couple of advantages here. One is obviously the cultural and the English component, but the other part is the abundance of nurses and medical, you know, people in the healthcare field that we have here in the Philippines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's huge alignment. Yeah.
You know, let's be honest with ourselves. A lot of people take up nursing not because they want to work in a hospital here in the Philippines, but they want to go abroad.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that would be a very, you know, for some people, that might be a very controversial statement. But, you know, at the end, let's think it through, really. I mean, most people... you know, it's all about being able to have a considerably better type of employment, so
yeah,
you can feed your family.
Absolutely, and so you see, and so you know are heavily invested in medical aspects, also the call center aspects of the kind of bigger end of town. Do you still see there's life and growth in that end of town? You've said that there is huge demand. You've said that there's a huge, you know, kind of a baby boom and growing dependency on these things. Why would you think that there's general concern in the industry then that this could be sunsetting and there's declining growth?
Well, you know, there are just too many, I guess, you know, things that actually affect the industry. You know, you have the leaders of both countries that actually could affect the industry. You could have, you know, government regulations that could affect the industry. You could have, you know, tax regulations that could affect the industry. There are also, you know, the rhetoric that could really affect the industry. Quite honestly, you know, on both sides of the pond, you know, there has been a lot of rhetoric that has been put forth that doesn't really help in the sense that, you know, it causes uncertainty and, you know, a ripple effect.
Yeah.
Into this business.
And it doesn't take a lot to kind of spook a big investment, really, does it? You know, it just takes one or two factors, and then these big investment decisions are probably shelved for another year, or they look to safer climates. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I used to work for a Fortune 200 company as a financial controller, and I absolutely understand how those things work, you know, from a large corporate.
It's just kind of risk mitigation, is it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, no, it's fantastic. So, it's incredible insight and really valuable to know about the bigger end of town. And I want to get you back so that we can kind of deep dive into Visaya KPO and exactly what that is and more about those services. If anyone wants to get in touch with you in the meantime, how can they do that?
They could actually reach me through our website. We have a fairly, robust, I guess if you might call it that, way for people to contact us on our website, or they could also contact me on LinkedIn, as well as my email address. My email address is actually on my LinkedIn account.
Fantastic. Okay, thank you, Butch. And of course, we'll put all of that in the show notes. That was Butch Valenzuela of Visaya KPO. Thank you, Butch, for your time there. If you want to get in touch with Butch or know any more about what he's mentioned, and of course, all of his contact details, then just go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/190. And if you want to ask us anything, as always, just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.